This is Roger Molina on Creative Disturbance. I'm so delighted today to be with Saulo Barreto from Brazil. We've been in contact for many, many years, and we're trying to make trouble together. So Saulo, maybe you can introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about the project, the Human Project.
So thanks, Roger. So yes, my name is Saulo Barreto. I'm from Brazil. I used to be a civil engineer with PhD in numerical methods. So in 2003, I decided to quit the university because I have no patience for bureaucracy and things, and helped to create an institute to produce, to develop social technologies, I mean, social solutions for social needs in close interaction with the communities. And then I met you in 2006. We discussed about how to save the world.
Okay.
Using art, science, technology.
Or at least make trouble. Maybe the URL of the Human Project?
IPTI.org.br.
BR. One of the other things in your background, and I guess when I met you, you were just finishing doing this, you worked on a very interesting project under Gilberto Gil when he was Minister of Culture in Brazil. Maybe you can just say a few words about that project. You were just talking about it and how it changed your life.
Yes, that was between 2004 and 2007. Gilberto Gil became Minister of Culture, and his idea was that the government should touch the vital points of the country, which means the local NGOs that produce culture, Brazilian culture. And my institution was in charge of bringing the aspect of digital culture. So goes to completely different small and far NGOs and teach them how to register, editing, and share their own culture in multimedia files so that the people from different cities and regions in Brazil could take music, for example, from the forest, from the Amazon forest, sampling and create a hip-hop music in São Paulo. And this changed completely my life because I used to think about in a more conservative way, how to dialogue with society. And in that case, I spent 3 years dialogue with completely different types of communities, and I learned a lot.
Yeah. So I guess one of the ideas there, which is part of the digital cultures idea, is that when a community can actually express its own culture, that's a very empowering thing. It contributes to self-respect. And so actually using digital culture as a technique or as a way of doing some social innovation is something that now is part of your Human Project. You described 7 or 8 projects that are now active, and listeners can find them on the website. The one that particularly caught my attention were the two of them, and let's chat about them. One was the art drawing project, and the other was the coding one. So let's just start with working with these communities on art making.
Yeah, so just to come back to the beginning of your sentence, it's funny because digital culture brings the opportunity to keep your own culture. Sometimes people think that when you share your culture, you put it in the website, etc., you are losing your culture. That's the opposite. So if you use the digital area, it's a great chance for you to expose your culture and improve your self-esteem and your identity as a good possibility to reach the world
yeah.
in a much better situation. And in Santa Luzia do Itaim, the city where we choose to put our center, is one of the poorest cities in Brazil and very poor also in comparison to the world. The most important intangible asset is mangroves. So then we came up with the idea to teach young talents to draw in a very high quality about the mangrove aesthetics. First of all, to bring new perspective of income. Now we have fashion groups work with us.
Before you do that, so indeed, as you say, for most urban people, mangroves are smelly
yeah.
and should be eliminated.
Yeah.
But in fact, in the local economy, it's crucial for the fishing that they depend on and so on. And so to actually convert the mangrove into a positive value
yeah.
was part of the idea, and to get to work with the children and the young people to teach them on how to represent that local mangrove.
Yeah, that's what they did. One thing was to use mangrove again as a source of income for the family, but now through art. And the second was to show the society the importance of preserving mangrove as a fantastic and beautiful aspect. And beauty is the value you are bringing to show this.
Right, so the amazing thing was you were able to help a dozen or so teenagers to learn how to draw very, very professionally and paint. And then you set it up so that their designs and their pictures were used in fashion and sold internationally.
Yeah, that's
right. So can you just say a bit more about that?
Yeah, because when we reach to a level of professional quality, as you mentioned, we start to think about which kind of market could buy or could be adequate for this kind of thing. And we found the fashion market, because also fashion has a very interesting aspect, which is to communicate very strongly with society about new values. So if you want to change society perspective about mangrove, fashion could be a very good partner. And we talk with some companies, and we make a partnership with one of the biggest fashion group in Brazil for ladies. And they just draw the new collection for next year. And they also help the kids to create their own first social business, focus initially on t-shirts, but we think big. We have a big dream about that.
Right, so it went from drawing to digital media and then to cell phone applications. And so, you know, in a village where indeed there are no role models for this, no examples, and I think one of the points you made is, you know, some of the things they're lacking or very poor in, one is role models or mentors, as well as the self-esteem that what they have is valuable.
Yeah. So when I work with Gilberto Gil, I remember a sentence he used to say in a song, that people know what they want, but people want what they do not know. So in any place in the world, you have competences and capacities like we have in Santa Luzia. It's just a question of raising in the adequate manner those capacities and try to reinforce the self-esteem, look about their natural resources and intangible assets as the main economic value. So that's the way you try to do the things.
Now, one of the other projects that, and I think you're not quite as far along in it, is the teaching coding to teenagers in these schools. Now, you know, that is really ironic because in advanced countries now, they're talking about trying to teach coding to children, but of course you teach reading and writing and mathematics and those things first. Here you are with a very small community, poor people, and you're teaching coding first, and they're good at it.
Yeah, incredible. I think it's a kind of, I would say that if they become older, maybe the school damaged the capacity to code.
So, because I mean, they've not had basic math.
It's a question of having or not a logical mind. So we try to select the best talents between 9, 10, and 11 years old, and you start to train code in an evolving process. It is fascinating. And this is also a very important possibility for improving income and generating companies and business in this local and remote village without the need to move to big centers.
Yeah.
Also because they are going to deal with problems of that kind of society.
Okay, and that's actually a point that you make, which of course is well recognized. Part of the danger of improving health and education is that anybody that succeeds, their parents say, you have to leave, there's no opportunities here, and so the educated, healthy people go to the city.
Yeah, of course, that's natural.
And so a key part of your strategy is not only how do you improve health and education, but how do you create local employment that then, for these young people that are coding, they would actually stay and build their own community.
Yeah, it's much more. If you look about the art project, again, now the young artists, they see that they are much more competitive if they remain in their village rather than if they move to Rio or São Paulo or New York, because there they have a kind of asset that other illustrators doesn't have. So you reverse the perspective of poverty into a completely new perspective of self-esteem and sustainability.
With the fact that one of the things that you're working with them to do is how they do things locally in their own fashion and their own environment, but then have access through the internet to be able to sell things that they can't afford.
Yeah, that's true.
But provides for them a way of a sustainable local economy.
Yeah, and I believe that in the future, they are also going to create new business for this kind of community where they live. Yeah. They are affordable also to do, in a future.
And of course, you know, one of the things that's interesting about that, traditionally in development, one of the things that happens is you try and sell local artifacts to the tourists, which actually doesn't allow you to share in the knowledge economy as part of doing that.
Yeah.
But as soon as indeed you're making things not only for yourself, but also for other people using online systems and so on, you can actually not get into this dilemma where when you go to some countries now, the local artifacts are made in China. And you know, you think you're buying a local artifact, but actually it's just the image has been appropriated.
Yeah, this is one of our biggest values, is local ground with global articulation, so that we can make people doing things that people can buy, but remain their own identity and their own capacity to create jobs, income, and improve the quality of the families.
Okay, so maybe the last thing that we have time for is one of the things you've talked about a lot is the issues of scalability, how you learn from failures, and a number of your projects have failed many times. And then this whole issue of scalability also beyond the project in Santa Lucia. So you were just in New York opening up a new Chamber of Commerce for the Human Project. Can you tell us just two words about that?
So yes, we fail a lot. We are very proud about our failing because failing is part of the any social innovation process. And so in New York, we realized that we want to internationalize now. Now we are in a level of reputation, quality of results that we need to internationalize, mainly because we want to replicate the model we are doing in Brazil in other countries, maybe in Latin America, why not in the US. So then we could join a lot of Brazilians and American friends in New York to launch last Tuesday an initiative to create in the US an IPTI US chamber. So a kind of network of people that like the way we do things to articulate partnerships, but also to finance new projects for new challenges. Challenges that are not only related to Santa Lucia or Brazil, but challenges that are very strong and necessary for the rest of the world.
Yeah, and I think you know one of the scaling problems then, and as I said, we're struggling, and I'm struggling with how you build networks of networks rather than hierarchical structures. As you mentioned, the methodology you've developed has been working very well in a number of cases in the Santa Lucia context, but it would probably not make sense in the barrios of Sao Paulo or the poor neighborhoods, because indeed there are context-dependent differences that are crucial.
Yeah, but when you talk about scalability in social technology, the concept you use, we are talking about reapplication. When you take something from Santa Lucia and bring it to Sao Paulo, you have to adapt to the context. Of course, they are so different, the efforts is very big. But we have in Brazil a very strong emphasis on the municipalities below 50,000 inhabitants, which is about 91%. So in that case, the adaptation you need is less complicated rather than in São Paulo.
Right. So there, you know, part of the idea, if I understand it, as you just said, is in seeing if this approach can work in other places and can be scaled in that particular way. You're talking about reapplication, which then intrinsically has the idea of evolution,
yes,
right?
Yes, for sure.
And so just like in an ecosystem, different species, if you move to a new environment, then you have to re-evolve in that environment. So in the case of social technologies and social innovation, that needs to be part of the basic assumption that it's reapplication and you evolve things to make sense in that local context.
Yes, that's why we do not use the word replication, because you are not replicating. We are reapplicating, because you have to learn with the new dynamics.
Right, and that, of course, goes against the dominant business model of our societies where indeed you're trying to convince people in many different countries to buy the same thing.
Yeah, that's of course. But I don't believe in this model, so that's why we try to do this.
Well, certainly not for social innovation. And as you know, we have a new dean here in the school here, Anne Balsamo. She has a book that I'm going to give you a copy of called Designing Culture. And as we were discussing, you said one of the HUSP problems is actually changing human behavior at the individual scale, which is a very difficult design problem. And then when you try and redesign culture at a group scale, it gets even more difficult.
Yeah.
So you want to just comment on how you view redesigning human behavior and human culture?
Yeah, for sure it's a big challenge. What we're trying to do in Santa Luzia context is to create small elites, small groups that can bring the values that are necessary. And then step by step, those local people who start to realize a new perspective of life, they can convince and change step by step other people. It's not something that you're going to change in 1 or 2 or 3 years. It's a long-term project, but it's much more effective if you start in this way rather to expect a miracle.
That's
the way you do the things.
Okay, very good, Salo. Well, thank you so much for talking with us on Creative Disturbance, and hopefully we can create some trouble together.
For sure. You will have no chance to avoid this. Thank you, Roger, for the invitation.
Okay, thank you.